We have a great author joining us right now, and I want to get right to it because I want to make sure we have a lot of time. It is Matt Rosenberg. He is the author of a new book out called What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Joining us live on the air right now is Matt Rosenberg. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Liz. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's early for you, but we just love talking to people who really do those deep dives, and that's what your book is about. It seems to me that you have gone into really look in depth to what is happening in Chicago. And Nick is actually from Wisconsin.
Now he's not going to like me.
And my husband is from Chicago. So we
Packers
have family. We there you go. We have
Bears.
We have family there that lives in Chicago, and they are worried about their children. You know, my husband's grandchildren are very young, school age. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
People are very worried. Even aldermen on the Chicago City Council are saying they're hearing from their constituents it's not safe to go outside anymore. We've had a really almost nonstop a violent crime wave since George Floyd died in 2020. Now, you know, violent crime obviously has been a big problem in our nation's biggest cities for many years. It rises, it falls. You know, it's not like this stuff has never happened before, but it's coming at us with an intensity that we've not really seen for a number of years in our big cities since George Floyd's heinous death in Minneapolis in May of 2020. So we've got carjackings almost nonstop in Chicago, armed takings of vehicles, which shakes people up. We've got armed robbery crews popping out of cars downtown, taking people's phones and wallets. We've got random stabbings. We've got murders, just, you know, over the top. We've got a big problem with something called bail reform, like many other cities. Then underneath it, there are major issues with parenting. There are major issues around racial rhetoric, failing schools, and in Chicago, corruption and rigged rules of governance. So it's quite a lot to wrap your arms around, but, you know, we can take it kind of issue by issue if you want.
Well, you know, Matt, the reason why I really wanted to bring you on, because what does it all mean to Myrtle Beach? And the reason why I wanted to talk to you is about the fact that we have actually had a string of shootings here, and we go through these little spates of shootings where people end up dead. We have armed robberies, and it seemed like to me that this comes in waves. And I don't know what kind of causes these spikes, because I remember, I want to say it was the late 80s, early 90s, where we were having waves of carjackings. I mean, now they're back, you know, and they'll shoot you. They don't care. You know, like, you can say, here's the keys, here's the car, bye-bye, you know, give me my baby or, you know, whatever, and just take the car. And then they'll just turn around and shoot you anyway. What is happening?
I know it's really, you know, no one really knows for sure. I want to, you know, call it rampant sociopathy. You know, it's just this same thing happened in Chicago just a few short weeks ago. A young African-American man who was the homecoming king of his high school class, 18. He was planning to go into the military. He was shot dead on Veterans Day after he surrendered his car and walked away. They shot him in the back.
Oh, my gosh.
We've had students around the University of Chicago in the Hyde Park neighborhood from where President Obama came and where I grew up. As a matter of fact, a 24-year-old Chinese graduate student in statistics shot dead after he gave his cell phone to a guy. And almost always, it turns out, the perpetrators are out either on a sweet plea deal or they're out because of low cash or no cash bail on previous, you know, alleged crimes they've committed. So the pattern we see here is very often young men are arrested for carjacking as juveniles, right? Mm-hmm. Armed theft of a car, taking a car at gunpoint. Wow. Sounds like you know all about that one. But what happens in our county court system here is, you know, we don't pay attention to who we elect as judges. And that's one of those down ballot things. But anyway, a lot of these judges misapply something called bail reform, which was intended for people who are nonviolent first-time offenders. You know, don't hold them up if they can't pay the $500 or $1,000 or $2,500, right? Bring it down to $250 or zero if they're a first-time nonviolent offender. Well, if that were really true, personally, I'm fine with that. But the problem is they're giving giving breaks like this to guys who got, you know, long rap sheets and who have just been arrested for violent crimes. So then they go out and do something just as bad or worse, up to and including murder. And bottom line, it's tearing apart the social fabric of not only Chicago, but, you know, cities like L.A., San Francisco, New York, and especially the Milwaukee area, where this guy who ran over the five, or is alleged, you know, to have run over the five people at that parade in Waukesha recently, he was out on
and he had bail reform. He had an active warrant in Nevada, but they didn't turn him in.
Yeah. The breakdown, you know, takes a number of forms. There's probation and plea deals. There's bail reform. There's the weakening of laws. Like, we had one here that allowed prosecutors to charge juveniles as adults for carjacking, but then the state legislature changed that. And they basically threw that out. They said, you can't do that anymore. And so we specifically have a problem here in Illinois with 15 to 17-year-olds who get busted for carjacking.
Are the gangs making them do it because they're not going to go to jail? And bringing them to chop shops?
Yeah.
What are they doing with these vehicles?
Yes. Basically, yes, I think so. Yes. And, you know, a lot of the killings are committed by juveniles. A lot of the carjackings are committed by juveniles. And I can't prove this. We need more research. But I greatly suspect it's to, like, earn your stripes.
Hey,
right?
Matt, I got to ask you. Mayor Beetlejuice always claims that that it's all the crime and the guns are coming from Indiana. So it's not our fault. The gun laws really do work. Is there any truth to that?
You know, there are a variety of excuses that Mayor Lori Lightfoot uses for the violent crime. The biggest one is systemic racism, which is our real bugaboo here in public dialogue, not actually in reality. But yes, she blames gun traffickers from out of state for a lot of the problem. And, you know, that's a big evasion for several reasons, I think. You know, first of all, the cops are confiscating a lot of guns, but the flow never stops. The real issue is, you know, a lot of people have guns and don't kill people with them, and they only use them for self-defense or hunting. So the question really is the proclivity to use your guns for stupid reasons. Now, in Chicago, we have no end of shootings, woundings, and killings because people get mad at each other and pull out their guns. So, you know, it kind of goes back to, I'm going to throw a curveball at you here. You know, read Marcus Aurelius and the Meditations. The Stoic philosopher said, look, if someone calls you a name, don't get bent out of shape over it. You know, you're a bigger man if you just keep your cool. But what we have here are these insane rap videos where guys are calling each other names. They're in rival gangs and they come out with guns and spray the block. They don't even aim. It's like beyond imagination. We're living in a Mad Max world here because young men have run off the rails. So what Lightfoot won't do is take it back to parenting, the home environment, stable two-parent families, faith and family. You know, these are the issues you can't talk about in a northern liberal city, but I do. I'm talking about it constantly. And what I found out when I went down to the South Side, you know, this was no armchair critique in my book. I went into black communities on the South Side and talked to parents, black parents, I talked to Latinos, and, you know, almost to a person, they said, you know, we need two parents in the home. We need people to really buckle down and get back to the basics. And that's just not happening. And if you talk about it, you're a racist.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And one of the things that I noticed way early on when the resurgence of Black Lives Matter came on the scene after George Floyd was when I went onto their website, one of the things that they were pushing for and supporting and actually made it one of their missions was to have women-only, you know, households. It was like it was like a weird. I actually have a screenshot of it, and they are actually against a two-person household, let alone a man in the life. To me, and Matt, I have said this so many times, and we're speaking with author Matt Rosenberg, What Next Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. One of the things that I've realized is that none of these policies, none of these bail reform and things like that, none of them are bad policies. I think they're great policies because it's doing exactly what the people who wrote them and passed them want them to do. So if it's obvious that they're going to get the result. It's obvious to all of us the results you're going to get when you let people out of jail, when you close federal prisons and just let people out. We, you know, I mean, we've heard Rashida Tlaib talking about that. You know, we need to close federal prisons and rehabilitate people. It's like, wait, there are some people that are criminally insane or violent or whatever. They need to stay in jail. They need to pay their punishment. Why are we not wanting to punish people? It's
you know,
what's wrong with punishment?
Yes, well, this, you know, criminal justice has turned into social justice. This, then, if you follow the path backward, takes us essentially into the universities and the colleges of our nation. You know, I think this started in the 60s and the 70s. There was something called deconstructionism, which came from a few French philosophers and social critics, but it evolved into this whole social justice movement. We're very uncomfortable. We, being, you know, urban elites and academic elites, and, you know, the politicians who run our big cities and represent too many of us in Congress, very uncomfortable with what they call disparate outcomes, right? You've heard that phrase, right? Disparities. You've also heard again and again the phrase of equity, right? Racial equity and social equity. So in essence, I think the philosophy driving this, which is promulgated in our state universities, right, is
and now in schools,
yes,
right? Yeah,
very much,
yeah,
equalized outcomes. In other words, you know, you for instance, the proportion of blacks in the population must correspond with the proportion of blacks in prison. Same with Latinos, whites, and Asians. So you get this rhetoric. You've heard the phrase, too, overrepresented or underrepresented populations. It's like, break that down. What does that really mean? That's gobbledygook, you know? But this whole form of language has taken over the way that we talk about these things in a lot of our big cities. So there's faulty assumptions underlying all of this. You know, you can't have equalized outcomes unless you have equalized inputs. And man is imperfect, right? And man is variable, so you're always going to have unequal inputs, and that goes back, again, to things like school choice, higher quality public education, a better, broader array of vocational training programs, training in the trades. It takes higher expectations for everybody, not differential expectations, and that's the real cancer here. I was listening to a prominent black writer, author, and social critic named Shelby Steele, and he said, listen, we know white people are for real when they're asking something of us. In other words, when they're not, you know, seeking to lower standards for blacks because they think blacks can't measure up. And that is the racism that is inherent in this, quote, systemic racism approach. You're really saying, when you say, oh, systemic racism keeps blacks down, first of all, it doesn't, not in 2021. Yeah, there are white racists around. There are black racists around. But when you say that, you're saying blacks can't measure up. And that's a horrible thing to say, because look at what people of all colors are accomplishing these days. It depends on you. And your upbringing, and you know,
and when you give people excuses that they can use, they will use it. you know, instead of taking responsibility for themselves. And Matt, we're out of time right now, but if people wanted to read your book or follow you, how can they find you?
Well, they can find my book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Just go to either site, enter What Next Chicago, and my website is called ChicagoSchooled.com. That's Chicago and Schooled with a K.com. And you can buy the book there, read long-form essays, and also latch on to my Twitter and Facebook pages.
All right. Very good. Matt, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk with you. Are you still up in Chicago?
I am. I've been back here for several months. I also moved back last year to write the book. So, yeah, I'm back here on the scene checking things out and continuing to do writing at places like City Journal, American Greatness, and JohnCastNews.com, a great conservative Chicago news site that your readers should check out.
Okay. John Cass, is that with a K?
Yeah, K-A-S-S dot news, JohnCast.news.
Okay,
Former Tribune. Yeah, former Tribune columnist, real good guy. I've been doing some writing at his site. And,
fantastic.
there's a lot of good analysis out there for people to latch on to.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Matt. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.